It's Tuesday, 16th of March. It's time to get your grin on with the Grincast, here to discuss the world of gaming from the past week. I'm your host, Ace, and joining me is Nikki.
Hello.
And we have a special guest today, the communications manager from Nutaku, Jay Acevedo.
Welcome. There you go. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Since you are our guest, we'll start how we... It's been a while since we've had a guest, I will admit, but how we've usually done guests in the past, we'll start talking about you. Tell us about yourself.
I am the communications and marketing manager at Nutaku Games, which is the largest online platform for adult video games. I am based out of Montreal, and I have been working 10 plus years in the video game industry. Worked on different things. Most of my career was actually built at Ubisoft, where I spent 7 years there, launching some games over there. Some little games that people might have heard of, game called Assassin's Creed and Far Cry and Watch Dogs, Just Dance, and all that stuff. So I had a blast at the time working there, learning about all these different brands and market them. But I also started my career as a game enthusiast, pretty much like you guys, talking about different things, attending events, doing podcasts, managing a community and all of that. So that basically is what led me to work on the other side of the gaming industry. So I always find it very cool when I'm invited on joining podcasts and live streams or discussions to talk about the game industry and stuff. So it's really cool and an honor to be amongst you guys.
Yeah, it's as I say, it's a pleasure to have you. I can't imagine that you can be involved in video games and live in Montreal and not have something to do with Ubisoft at some point.
Yeah, it's kind of like a little tiny city on its own, to be completely honest. So, it didn't start it that way, but it was always funny because whenever I was thinking about joining the industry, perhaps maybe because at first I it wasn't really part of my goal, but when it became something of a possibility, I always saw myself starting with independent game studios, and then kind of graduate to the bigger studios and all that stuff. But I was I was very surprised when the opportunity just came to say, okay, well, your first kind of game industry experience is going to be with Ubisoft. And I remember very clearly when I started, the first game that I had to work on was Assassin's Creed, I believe Revelations. Yes, it was Revelations because it was the last of the Ezio franchise or what have you. But then after that, I was like, okay, well, you joined, you were launching Revelations in a couple of months, but you're going to be working on Assassin's Creed 3. So that was kind of my big first game that I worked on. It was kind of daunting to really go from the game enthusiast world and knowing all these developers and people working in the industry locally also to say, hey, you'll be launching an Assassin's Creed game as your first. So intimidating, but a lot of learnings and a lot of fun.
That's fair. So you're now at Nutaku. How big's the team? Because I can't imagine it's the same size as Ubisoft.
It's really much smaller. Obviously, for us, we're a distribution platform, right? So we don't necessarily make the games, but we do host several hundreds of games that are being developed from several teams from across the world. So our team is rather small, but incredibly busy, incredibly in demand in terms of not just scouting the games but also hosting them and making sure that all the marketing is properly put in place, and obviously we're managing growth in terms of users coming to the platform, and also the diverse offering in terms of what Nutaku offers to the user base. So much smaller, but not bored by any means necessary. But yeah, but definitely a fun experience. Obviously, marketing games with adult content versus AAA mainstream games is not the same thing. A lot of way more challenges in front of us, but with the community, and there's definitely very different aspects that makes the experience very different, and also a tremendous learning curve in terms of taking the games and finding clever ways to market them and reach out to players. So it's a great challenge, and it's an industry that it keeps growing. So I'm super happy to be here and to discuss that and maybe answer some of your questions that you may have. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah, it certainly seems like a busy place. You've got 50 million registered players, over 500 PC and mobile games. And minutes before we started recording this, I got an email announcing Lost Academy Deluxe on another free-to-play mobile game.
Yeah, actually, you mentioned 50, but it's actually 60 now. So,
That's grown since I got those numbers sent through.
But yeah, 60 million is definitely a big number in there. So we always joke internally when we always say, you know, we're one of the most popular brands in gaming that not a lot of people know about. So it's definitely something that we make ourselves pride of. We're happy to be working with, I think we have something like 100 plus game developer partnerships in place. And yeah, there's every now and then there's a cool game joining the platform, and all of a sudden it's talking about it, and people are discovering more and more about the adult game industry.
The other day we covered the announcement that House Party is coming to Nitaku. That's I quite like that.
Yeah, we got House Party. We got Honey Pop 2 that was also launched a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. And yeah, like we have a nice stream of games releasing, both free-to-play and premium games, you know, releasing on a daily basis. But like, let's say like every week here and there, there's like a handful of games releasing, and some of them are in soft launch. Like they're testing their different mechanics and their audiences before fully launched, and others just are fully blown launch games. So yeah, it's definitely interesting to see all these games and products come to the platform.
Yeah. Tell us about the Now I Nitaku campaign.
Well, the Now I Nitaku campaign is just a continuation of what we've been doing. So for us, again, like I mentioned earlier, in a very cheeky way, is that, you know, we're one of the most popular brands in gaming that not a lot of people know about, and obviously, yeah, that the adult game industry does have an impact on that awareness. So we did a couple of things in years past to kind of attract attention and talk to people about who we are and what's our purpose and why these games exist. So the Now Nitaku campaign was basically just another fun way for us to create pieces of content that are not just shareable, but also that when people come across them, they're like, oh, like these hilarious ads, you know, look like anything that we could find on the internet with high production value and a nice fun message. And basically what we wanted to achieve with that campaign was two things. One, kind of raise that question amongst people that they has like, oh, I've heard of Nitaku, but I never really went to see. So that kind of opens up that conversation. But also, it serves as a legitimate tool for people who've been playing Nitaku since day one and are looking for a way to, I guess, legitimize their presence. And for people to say, yeah, you know, like I've been telling you about Nitaku for a longest while, and I've been playing those games, and it just gives them extra opportunity to kind of go to their friends and say, hey, you know, that platform I was telling you about, take a look at this. So it was kind of like a fun comedic way for us to kind of reach out to new audiences, but also give those Nitaku fans that have been there for the longest time extra content to kind of just validate their point, their hobby, their passion, really, because we do have a highly engaged user base, and a fairly vocal one as well.
I've been on the Discord server, I've seen.
Yeah, exactly. So, but again, you know, like it's nothing different from the gaming industry, right? You have passionate fans and players all over the world that like to share what they play. So for us, it's no different. But obviously, when you're touching on the sexual content and all of that, that's when it becomes interesting as a topic of conversation, because, you know, no matter what people say, you know, sex is part of our lives. And despite having people thinking that it should be hidden and it shouldn't be discussed, then we engage people on the contrary, and we want to give them the opportunity to be, you know, talkative about it and share their experiences, because again, these type of games are awesome. They play well, they're fun, they're well developed, and these teams, these artists, these talented people working on those games definitely you know, deserve to be put on the spotlight, to be showcased what they can do. So I feel like since I've joined the team and started working on this thing on the platform and talking about it myself, I've discovered a whole new way of talking about video games in a much more mature but also free way, and that maybe people don't realize it, but it's a wholesome scene, you know, like it's people are sharing and having fun and talking and discussing and just basically what any type of game industry product will love to have, you know, a wholesome community and highly engaged and always ready to check out the newest releases. So I'm super happy to be part of that experience.
Okay. Fairly recently, there was a redesign of the website. How important was accessibility when making the redesign?
Well, with the evolution of the product, I think you always have to look at what are the things that work best and what are the things that we need in order to us to be not just be accessible, but also functional. So the site has been, again, around for 6 years, and the first 4 or 5 years have been really about a simplistic website approach. You know, it's funny when I ever talk about it, because it was functional, it was working, but now that you look at the new version, it's like, do you want to go back to that other one? You're like, hell no. You know, like you don't want to go back, just because of how the games are displayed and the different filter options that we have. You know, we're the first gaming platform in the world to actually offer a sexual preference filter that allows every user to customize what they want to see when they load their client or when they load the Notaku.net on their browsers or mobile applications. So to us, it was just, I guess, the next best evolution for us in terms of a platform. It's just to offer something that it was more up to date with what is happening today, something that is more accessible, visually stunning as well, because before it was just a simple, you know, kind of white background web page with just you click on it and you start playing right away and great. But, you know, whenever you want to go to the next level, you want to definitely offer a more, I guess, appealing, a visually appealing experience. And obviously, it also comes with the feedback from our users, right? Like, oh, have you guys thought of this? Or can we have a dark mode? Can we do this? Can we do that? So obviously, you know, it was a lot of work for our design and engineering teams to rework the entire back end of the platform and just retool the entire experience from the ground up. So we've been in that redesign for not close a year, but almost going in there into that full year, because we launched it last summer. So we're about to enter our first year of the redesign. So, but yeah, we felt that it was the time had come for Notaku to evolve as a brand and to evolve as a product. And yeah, and obviously the feedback has been super positive. And obviously, again, you know, it's not perfect. There's still a few things that we we are still working on, that we're adding and we're changing, but it was definitely something that the Notak was a platform needed.
I quite like the new site. I use the launcher, and I do appreciate how that mirrors the website.
Yeah. Also, the launcher received that update just a couple of months ago also. So we started with the website, then the launcher, and then obviously the mobile app as well on Android as well received a nice makeover. So yeah, you know, like it's just part of the evolution. So we're happy that it's out there, and it opens up the opportunity for more in the future. So we can't wait to continue to work on it and bring more bells and whistles to our user base.
Okay. A couple of the free-to-play games, I've been following Notaku for a while. A couple of free-to-play games over the years have launched with different titles, mainly a certain harsh C word, before changing within a couple of weeks. Has that been because of audience feedback, or...?
I'm not quite sure to which game. I think I have an idea on which game you're referring.
The current name is Chick Wars.
Yes. So yeah, I mean, for that end, it depends also on the developer feedback on what they're trying to do. So for that game in particular, because there is a safe for work version and there is a non-safe for work version for it. So games tend to change names from one to another. We're a distribution platform, right? So we always want to ensure that the developer, not just agrees with the change, but also that they're the ones submitting it. And there's a bunch of other reasons as to why one game can change from another. But yeah, I mean, there's this. I think it's just a matter of us as a distribution platform to also listen to the feedback that we receive and the discussion with the developers and the communities as well. So things change. And I don't think that's going to be the last thing that we see on our platform change from one place to another.
Right. I do understand that some of these games wouldn't have been developed by native English speakers, so certain words aren't as harsh in other languages.
Correct.
A lot of developers find that streaming and word of mouth results in more sales. But do you find that Twitch banning games related to sex and people's reluctancy to talk about it in general hamper sales of Notaku's catalog? Or
I don't necessarily want to attribute that to Notaku on its own, but we all know that there are some type of content that is being either censored or completely taking off some specific platforms, and we know that the sexual themes are always a pinpoint of discussion. For us, obviously, we can't say that it hurts us completely, but obviously it impacts the awareness, not just for us, but also the awareness of the game developers as well. I would hope that in one day, at some time, we can have a serious conversation about sex and sexual themes as a society to better have an understanding of that and hear from everybody's opinion and basically grow as a society out of that. So. But yeah, obviously anything that it gets either blocked, censored or shifted or shamed on as well, has an impact on the content and the product. So for us, obviously, the more we discuss about these games, the more we discuss about the stigma behind not just the adult games, but just adult themes in general. As soon as we have an understanding about that and a willingness to discuss this subject matter, I think we're going to grow as a group, and we won't be facing those same walls in the future, whether it is near or whether it's far. But I think it all starts with a nice conversation, an understanding on the effects of the content. And then, yeah, you know, I think that's it. And also, I think for video games, it's a medium that it's relatively young compared to any other type of entertaining mediums out there. So I feel like the interactivity and the engagement that these products engage into consumers will allow for a deeper conversation and a better understanding of these type of content being available to people. So yeah, obviously I took a big detour to answer your question, but you know, I think as long as we are aware of this and that we can have a serious and mature conversation about it, then obviously everybody wins from this. Whether you're a platform like us, whether you're a game developer like some of the developers that we have partnership with, or anyone in general, actually, that wants to speak about sexual preferences or anything related to sexual themes, basically.
Okay, you've already touched on this subject with the site having sexual preferences. A couple of years ago, Nataku added a bunch of LGBTQ plus browser games. Was that a big push from you guys, or was it just a coincidence that things like Menbang were already in production when you decided to do this?
I wasn't there when this happened, but obviously for us, when we launched a fund, I believe it was 3 years ago, it was basically for us to, you know, when someone says, oh, we offer a diverse experience or a diverse offering of products or whatever, you want to resonate to that as much as possible. So when the fund got launched and those games were launched, obviously the idea was to promote, give the option, but also engage with developers within the LGBTQ plus community to come forward and say, hey, I have a product, I have something that might be cool. I'd like to apply to that fund, or I'd like to be helped in some shape or form, or I don't want none of your help, but I would definitely love to be published on the platform. So obviously when you do things like that, you do have users from the LGBTQ plus community coming and say, hey, you know, what about adding this, or what about adding that? Why is that game is not being featured, or why is that game doesn't appear? So at that point, a feature like the sexual preference, for example, becomes very handy, right? Because at this point, anyone could choose which games they want to see when they load their clients, and which games they want to be suggested as well, right? Because as we are adding visual novels or that we add a free-to-play game that covers those subjects, before on the old website, you weren't able to see them, right? You would have to know about them. You would have to search them, dig deeper on the website to find that and have that game. But now with that sexual preference option, for example, whenever a game launches and has that content, then all of a sudden the person who selects that information on their client or website, it's automatically notified that, hey, you know, you may have missed this game, but we just released this and that might be of interest for you. So yeah, I mean, obviously for us, the goal is to continue to have games from the LGBTQ plus community showing up. You know, we're actively always talking to developers who might be interested, who would want to see that. And again, as you grow as a platform, you're also learning to handle better specific conversations and specific features on a website or what have you. So yeah, our goal is to really show that these games can exist with our own platform. They're more than welcome. And that we personally, I would love to see the influx of those games increase very soon, because they're out there. And again, some of those developers don't know who we are, how we function, and what it's like. So it's always, we have a business development team that handles those discussions, and it's always great. A couple of weeks ago, we liked one of the underground popular gay games called Full Service launch on Nataku. So we got great feedback on that end. We have another game coming up, which the name escapes me right now. That is coming up as well on Otaku very soon. So again, the more we talk about our product, the more we talk about the platform, the more we talk about the diversity wish that we have as a distribution platform, then the more products and the more developers are going to come knocking on our door, and we can have these meaningful discussions.
Okay, what does it mean for you to what does it mean to you for Nataku to be an inclusive brand?
So for me, an inclusive brand is, I think it has to speak from both levels and both sides, right? So you have the games and the products that have to not just fit that demographic, but also offer that content in a faithful way. Us internally already, we already have a diverse team of experts within the team. So I guess to me, that inclusivity comes from both sides. You need to have an open mind and an open ear about what's happening on the exterior to be able to adapt your product, make it evolve. And again, it's not about numbers, but it's more about the way you're doing it. But at the same time, having people on the internal understanding that struggle, understanding that wish, and expanding our own strategies to make sure that we can touch on that. What you mentioned earlier about the Now in Otaku campaign. So that was also an opportunity for us to do branded content and showcase that, yeah, like these games are for everyone, and these games appeal to different types of gamers and consumers out there. And we definitely don't want to come out as, oh, you know, you're always featuring these type of people in your ads or what have you. So that was also something that we wanted to share with everyone, is that, you know, anyone could be playing the Otaku games, and we welcome them, their feedback, and everything that comes with it.
Okay, fantastic. What's the process like for getting games onto the store? Do you reach out to developers generally get in touch with you first, or?
It's a little bit of one of the other. It's a mix of both. We either reach out when we come across something that we see could be interesting, and developers come our way to say, hey, I've been working on this game for X amount of time, or I've been polishing this game on this platform and I would like to have it available here. And again, you know, they reach to our publishing team and our biz development team, and discussions happen, and that's it. I'm not really part of that process myself. But I see the influx of conversations and opportunities arising for both us as a distribution platform, but also for them as developers. So I would say that it's quite a nice balance between both. And yeah, I don't think being on one side or the other is better than another. I think balance is perfect, and that's what we always strive for.
Okay. Tell us why Nataku is better than the competition. And you can't say the redesigned website, because we know that one.
Why? Well, listen, I think there is a... obviously, this priors me, because again, I'm a young pup at Nataku. And the platform has been growing for years now. So I think for me, the appeal comes from several places. Obviously, the number of games and how they're being handled. I believe that this is also something that strikes a balance within the players. The technological approach, as we talked about the redesign and all that stuff. But I believe that people have the user base that we got. Like, we don't got 60 million registered users in 6 years without the merit of not just the games that are being published, but how the situations with the users are being done, and how the user base reacts positively to what we do. So for me, being there for a year, I don't think it's just one thing in particular that makes us who we are. I think it's a mix of several things. Curiosity obviously plays a large role in there as well. And we are the largest English-speaking platform out there as well. So, you know, you can throw in, I guess, the language barrier as well at the same time. So for me, it's like a combination of several things. But I mean, even for me, who used to work in the AAA gaming industry, to see a platform grow that much in such a short amount of time shows that something is truly working, or a combination of several things to make it that it's working. You know, I think the Xbox Game Pass just had something like 30 million or 40 million subscribers. And I think it's 3 years that Game Pass exists right now, or 2 years, 3 years. So obviously I'm not comparing ourselves to Xbox or Game Pass. But what I'm saying is, when you have several things that are consumer-oriented aligned, usually people, the word of mouth will go at, and people will share, and people will talk. And again, our awareness levels are still there. Every time we talk to someone about the adult game industry in Otaku, they're always surprised about the numbers and the registration numbers and the number of games and this and that. But I think that what makes us special, and again, we haven't even reached our point of saying, oh, you know, of saturation or anything. But I think it's really truly a combination of several elements that makes us into that success path of having a platform that is functional, that is appealing, that is fun to be around with, to experiment with all these games that are available, to keep seeing developers getting the interest to come to the Otaku and distribute their games on, and obviously us continue to offering that support and developing that expertise. Because again, everybody talks about the independent gaming scene and the AAA gaming scene and the VR gaming scene, but no one really talks about that multi-million dollar adult game industry sector that not only puts games out and saves studios from shutdown, but also allows thousands of creatives around the world to show their talents and show that they can make games. So it's really a combination of several elements that makes us the, I guess, go-to platform in the world for these games.
Okay, well, a final prepared question that I have. Do you have games that you recommend for newcomers?
Oh, well, we recently launched a feature on the site that basically tells you what are the top 10 most popular games on Otaku. And I would say that that's a great place to start, because those are the games. Sometimes you have the new game that arrives that is there because people are curious, it's popular, and it's played. But I would say that more than 70% of those games are games that are established franchises. So you get games like Fab CEO, Booty Calls, you get Kamihime Project R, you get Majikami. So you get those games that have been there. Project QT is one of them. Actually, I think it's amongst our top three, top of my head right now. But those games have been out for a while now. So whenever you go to that top 10 and you look at the game and you go to their product page and like, oh yeah, this game was released 2 years ago and is still a top performer. Yeah, those, I would say that's a good place to start. Personally, when I joined the team, I spent a lot of time between Project QT and Booty Calls. You know, there's something in it that I find it really appealing. Project QT, because it's one of those games that was tailored almost for the hardcore gamer in mind. So anyone who has played those JRPGs can definitely see something in Project QT that is super engaging and super fun to play with. But also games like Booty Calls that, you know, they're very easy to get into. The story and the interactions, the characters are super tongue in cheek and funny. And it's accessible gameplay, and I could just lose myself for an hour or two playing in there very aimlessly and having a good fun. So yeah, you know, I think again, that's what makes the Force of Otaku, right? You either go with games that are complex and long-standing engagement, And you have games that you can play in bursts here and there, and you know, it gives you the satisfaction that you're looking for. So, yeah, if I recommend something, yeah, I would go Project QT, Booty Calls, and go check that top 10 feature on our site, and that's a great place to start.
I've been playing FAP CEO since it launched, so I can tell
why
that's been in the top 10.
Yeah, that's also one of the popular ones as well. So
it's a clicker. You can go in for 5 minutes. It's got I haven't hit a point where I've thought, oh, I must spend money. It's been a case of, oh, I can spend money. I'm going to spend money.
Yeah, and honestly, gaming has evolved in the last few years, right? So if you have 2 to 3 hours to give to a game, you will sit down and play it. You know, I think, and then people sometimes are just like, hey, you know, I just have 20 minutes, half an hour to play something, and that's good. I like the balance that you can play games without paying, and if you want to pay, then, you know, you have... You advance the game the way you want it. So yeah, I mean, gaming has definitely changed over the years, and definitely as a professional in the game industry myself, I've seen the industry evolve in such huge lengths that you have almost no choice to have all these as a platform to have all these experiences available in there, whether you want to spend money or not, whether you want to spend 25 hours in a game or 2 hours, doesn't really matter. Like, you definitely want the consumer to have as many options as possible to enjoy what they want to enjoy. So that's the beauty of platforms like Nataku. It's just the sheer amount of options that you can have, and the opportunities for games for you to discover are plentiful. And you know, we're nowhere changing our strategy in that end. So we definitely are keeping in mind the user at all times, whenever as much as we can. So
okay, thank you for answering those questions, Nikki. Do you have anything that you'd like to ask?
Yeah, I mean, that's all been super interesting. So thank you very much. I think one question I want to ask, I kind of touched on it a little bit, but beyond the sort of usual stigma around obviously games that have sexual content in them and all the kind of taboo of that, what's been some of the challenges you've faced with promoting both the platform and the games on the platform outside of just that usual taboo?
I to be completely honest, that is the biggest struggle. That's the biggest struggle, because even when we obviously when you talk to mainstream outlets, you know, the sexual content is number one, right? But as soon as you talk to gaming journalists, for example, or gaming outlets, they can definitely see the change begins in terms of okay, we understand the stigma and whatever. But at the same time, those games, you know, they function, they work, they're engaging people, they're bringing people in, you know, and also they see that other games, mainstream games, how they deal with sexual themes and what are the places, the things or the systems or the processes that are being put in place by them. So we always have that kind of dual conversation with gaming enthusiasts, because they understand we understand the sexual part, but there's also the gaming aspect that is definitely worth discussing, because, you know, you talk about game developers finding success, right? Like, how can you explain a game developer who publishes on the App Store and, you know, there are multiple reports of, you know, only 1% of the games that are being published are actually bringing any money to the developer, for example. So how can you explain a developer who takes their game to the App Store, doesn't work, and it doesn't have the revenue, doesn't have the players, but then as soon as that same developer says, well, I'm going to bring this game to other platforms, and maybe I'm going to adultify them in such way, then all of a sudden there's revenue streams, the studio's working, they're hiring new artists, and their projects are growing, and they make more games after that. So the gaming enthusiast reporting world definitely sees a value into that conversation. But as soon as you go to mainstream, it's a little bit more difficult because they don't necessarily understand how the gaming industry works. And for them is, oh, sexual content. Yeah, okay, no, we can't talk about it. No matter what you're trying to tell us, or no matter what angle you're pitching it, it's difficult for XYZ reason to talk about it. There are opportunities out there, but obviously we hope that the more we talk and the more we share, all these opportunities are going to multiply even more. So yeah, I would say that stigmatization of sex is a challenge. Is a challenge for us. But again, you know, we are hopeful that the conversations will continue. We're hopeful that we're going to have more opportunities to talk about this, because again, this past year for the pandemic also, you know, with OnlyFans and sex workers in general with the internet, and there's a bunch of things that have been kind of unearthed in 2020 that are not just about sex, but other subjects as well, that I feel that we're in this kind of transition in time of, okay, we definitely need to have these conversations, invite more people around the table and trying to figure out, you know, why is that? Or why is that we don't want to talk about it? Or why is that we push back against it? Or why some people are just, they don't want to hear it. So for us, it's really a goal. Number one goal for us is to really have these open conversations with anybody. And really show that, you know, beyond the games and beyond the success stories of developers and products, there's a human connection. There's a human topic in there that I believe not just video games, but entertainment in general could benefit from it. So I would have loved to give you this kind of different, insightful answer that doesn't really talk about the stigma behind sex, but it's a really, you know, really present challenge that we are more than happy and willing to continue to push against and make room for that conversation, because it's important.
Nice, that's really good. Thank you. I don't really have any more questions, if I want to say, so that you've covered everything. This has been really insightful.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I'm we're super happy to receive the invitation and to join. And yeah, hopefully this is going to open a brand, you know, like a different branch of conversation on you guys' community as well. Because I was going up to the Discord and I see, like, you know, people are talking and sharing and stuff. So, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to see what your community has to say about the topic, and really hope that it's gonna, you know, it's gonna make the rounds, and it's gonna, you know, continue to act positively on this sexual stigma that it's out there. And yeah, we're super happy to be part of that discussion and that social battle.
Thank you for joining us. Thank you for letting yourself be interviewed. And would you like to stay for some news?
I would love to hear for some news.
You're going to have to invest some time into your Animal Crossing Island again, because the buddies are back.
Oh, God.
The infamous Bunny Day is returning because, you know, Animal Crossing New Horizons has been out for a year.
Oh, that actually, I didn't even realize that until you said it. That's really, that hurts, because it came out right at the start of, at least here in the UK, when kind of lockdown kicked off. And, oh, God. Oh, we've been doing this for a year. Oh, God. I'm just going to go have an existential crisis for a minute.
The update's coming on the 18th of March. Yeah, if you played it last time, you know what to expect. I didn't. I still haven't played New Horizons, even though every Switch in my house has a copy of it.
isn't that event with the character that people were putting like in jail and stuff?
Yeah,
that's the one, right? With the eggs. Okay. Yeah. I remember my sons were not fond of that one. They were like, annoying as hell. What can we do to get rid of them? And so you would think that they would learn their lesson after a year, but no, I don't understand why to bring him back, but
well, it's only coming back for a week, 28th of March, the 4th of April.
People are still talking about it, even if it was just for a week. You know, like that was interesting.
Yeah, yeah. The update itself will come on the 18th to so everyone's got it downloaded ready for the 28th.
The problem with the Bunny Day update the first time round was that because it happened so quickly after the game launched, for anyone who didn't play it, the way the update worked is that you had to find eggs and you could exchange different colored eggs for different items, but you'd find eggs as you went around your sort of daily gathering of resources. But if you have, to put it in perspective, like, you can only get like a certain number per day. Like, you can only, you know, chop a tree 3 times per day kind of thing. So if you were still really early on, that was just holding you up. You were losing resources because of these blasted eggs. And it was just a nightmare. So my advice to anyone is do what I did, which was open up go online and find an Excel sheet where someone worked out the exact number you need for every item. And then as soon as you've got that number, get all the items and then just don't touch the game ever again.
Well, speaking of spreadsheets, a large number of players in Genshin Impact have been subject to attacks by hackers and have lost their accounts. Other accounts have been completely destroyed. This is not the first time that Genshin Impact has had account strife, shall we say?
Yeah, it's interesting this time around because basically MiHoYo, the developers of Genshin Impact, have come out and sort of given a bit of a statement about how they're going to increase security. Haven't said what that's going to be. People are basically praying for two-factor authentication because that would just make everything so much simpler. But in their statement, they call out that most of the people who got hacked this time around was because they gave their information to a fake website, which raises many questions about both MiHoYo's attitude to the hacks, the gullibility of people, and just how popular Genshin is. I mean, it's nigh and impossible to avoid Genshin leaks. Like, that's like, I've never seen a game have so many leaks in terms of like content, and I can only attribute it to like how popular the game is, because they're everywhere. The leaks are just everywhere, and I don't mean like data leaks like this hack. I mean as in just content leaks. They're everywhere. But yeah, like, people, you know, be careful when logging into sites that connect your accounts, I suppose, and don't let random people on Discord or whatever have access to your account. But this seems specifically kind of targeted to Thailand, this particular hack. A lot of people who were claiming they were hacked were from a Genshin Thailand group, so no word yet on sort of the wider international. Like, I've not had any emails to say, hey, check your account, but it might be a good idea to just keep an eye on your account regardless. Maybe change your password if you're concerned.
I don't have a good segue, but final news piece that we'll talk about. Lara Croft, the Tomb Raider herself, is now in Fortnite as of Battle Pass Chapter 2, Season 6. It's Tomb Raider's 25th anniversary, so 25 years since people were playing on the PlayStation. And Lara Croft is now in it, and you can have the reboot skin, or you can buy the premium classic skin. She does not have triangular breasts.
She's high polygon. High poly count. They ruined it. How dare they?
I didn't say that, but
that's what you were insinuating. No, this is kind of cool, because now we've got Master Chief, we've got Kratos, countless superheroes, Lara Croft, Ripley's in there, you've got Sarah Connor, Predator, Alien, Deadpool. Oh god, there's so many. Like, people used to say that Super Smash Bros. Was the biggest collab in gaming history, and it's just like, Fortnite didn't just ask them to hold their beer, Fortnite handed them the whole keg. And yeah, they're just rolling. It's kind of a shame that I suck at the game.
I've still never played it.
I played it for the longest time. My sons were really avid fans, but then they burned us out completely, and we loaded into the game last weekend just to like curiosity, because they also had the Mandalorian in there, obviously. And I was like confused by the menu system. I was like, I feel like everything here is tied to some sort of skin character that I need to purchase. And I don't know. We played a little game, and my sons were just being like, "Yeah, Dad, I think they were pretty much done now." And we deleted the client off the consoles, and that was it. I'm really interested to see what those numbers look like right now, because I feel like most of the young folks who were playing the game 2 years ago are kind of moving towards something else, perhaps. So I'll be curious. I'll be curious to see what that DAU looks like and how many people are still playing. So, and again, there are people who have never played Fortnite, right? So this is probably the reason why all these 80s, 90s heroes bringing back or coming back to Fortnite, or actually just arriving. They're not even coming back, but they're just arriving to Fortnite for the first time. That's what maybe now it's getting new people on board, perhaps. So
that's a very good point. If they had Optimus Prime in, I'd be severely tempted.
Uh-oh. There you go. Well, you can always tweet at them and say, "Hey, I have an idea." And that's it. We could finally have that super Transformers/G.I. Joe crossover that Hasbro wanted to do for years. Maybe we can have it on Fortnite now. Wait, didn't they have G.I. Joe not long ago, actually?
I think they did, actually, yeah.
I think they did have Snake Eyes, right? Didn't they have Snake Eyes in there?
Yes. Yes, he was added.
Oh, so there you go. So Optimus Prime is really not far away. I'll think of you when it happens.
I just did a quick Google search. I don't know how accurate this is, but apparently there are over 5 million people playing Fortnite right now.
Crikey.
Yeah, the same site also claims there's over 1 million people playing Among Us, which, yeah, that checks out.
Yeah, it checks out. Checks out.
Okay, I think that brings us to the end of our podcast. Thank you for joining me, Nikki and Jay.
Yeah, this was really fun. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming. Everyone should check out nataku.com or .net, depending on your safe for work or not safe for work preference. Thank you for listening to this episode. Don't forget to check out GameGrind.com, where you can find all of our writing. Keep an eye on social media. Just search for GameGrind to find out whenever a new podcast goes live, as well as the daily news, reviews, and articles. And finally, if you subscribe via Amazon Music, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Stitcher, thank you. And if you can leave a review on your platform of choice, an even bigger thank you. And finally, game on.